Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is, what do you want and what stops you? And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life are 866-254-1579. It's toll-free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. And if you want to defy the North American bias, you can reach the show by dialing your international country code, usually 001-760-918-4300. And I'll get to your calls, and particularly today, I'm interested if you've got something you want to explore, if you've got a project or a goal or just something in your life that you would like to see more about, to open up to more, to be more effective or more successful with, then please do phone in and we'll do some good old fashioned coaching. But I want to set the table first. I want to talk about these two questions, because when I started as a coach, and really for the first sort of 15, 16 years that I worked as a coach, these two questions were pretty much all I had, and they were all I needed. A client would come, and either formally or informally, I would ask them, well, what do you want? What would be great? What would you love to have happen as a result of our time together? If a miracle happened from our work, from our session, what would the miracle be? How would you know that it happened? How would I know that the miracle had happened? What would be the first thing that would let you know when you woke up tomorrow morning that the miracle had happened? What's your heart's desire? What would be amazing? What would make you go, wow? These are all ways of just getting at, what do you want? Right? What brings you here? Why are you listening? What do you hope to get? It doesn't force or require a very specific answer that's stated in the correct first person language, or, you know, we used to have so many rules for what constituted a well-formed outcome. And I look at it now as sort of it's kind of useful to know if you care what happens next. Like, it's that simple. If you don't care what happens next, then it really doesn't matter, right? We can talk about having a richer experience of the moment, and that's a really valid thing, but then that's what you want, right? A richer experience of the moment. It may be you want more of something, but you don't really care how much more. You just want more. It may be a direction you want to go in. But the direction of travel really comes back to, again and again and again and again and again, what do you want? And then the only other question that ever seemed relevant to me in my coaching is, well, what stops you? Because if you know what you want and nothing stops you, you'll get it. So what stops you? Now, it's funny to me, because I look back on my first book, You Can Have What You Want, which was literally part one of the book is 6 chapters on what do you want. And part 2 of the book is 9 chapters on what stops you. And I at the time used to work with a model I called the GROWN model. And the GROWN model stood for goal. That's the G. Reality. In other words, where are you in relation to the goal? Obstacle analysis. So we spent a lot of time breaking down what stops you. And next steps. Well, I still think it's really useful to know where you want to go, and I still think it's really useful to know where you are in relation to that. But obstacle analysis looks different to me these days. So I had it broken down. I identified 9 categories of obstacle that essentially I noticed, and this was just something that evolved with working with clients over the years, that when they'd answer the question, what stops you? It would break down into 1 of 9 categories. So sometimes what seemed to stop them, the apparent obstacle, was a lack of information, right? I just don't know what to do, and I don't know where to go to find out, right? Sometimes it was skill. I don't yet have the skills I need to succeed in this area of my life. Sometimes what stopped people look to be a belief. Well, I just don't think it's possible, or I don't think it'll work, or, you know, I don't think I can do it. I mean, I get it can be done, but not by me. Or what stops you is a lack of well-being. I'm just too stressed. I don't have the energy. I'm too unwell to go out and create what I want. Or it feels like other people stop you. Well, you know, I would, but my boss, you're my partner, my kids, it's my friend. They just make it difficult for me, or it's just not up to me. If it was up to me, nothing would stop me. Or sometimes what stopped them would be a seeming lack of motivation, right? Well, I just don't care enough. You know, I can't seem to get started. I can't seem to create momentum. I'm trying to get myself to blah, 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 blah. Sometimes what stop people seem to be to do with time, right? There's just not enough time in the day. Or money. I just can't afford it. If only I had the money, then I would. Dot, dot, dot. Right? Sometimes it was just plain old fear. Right? I just feel sick at the thought of pushing myself through this, and so I don't. Now, here's how that obstacle course to success looks different to me now. Any one of those things may be going on, right? Any one of those things may be an obstacle. But the question is, why does it stop you? Like, if I don't know, the other day, I wanted to make burgers for my daughter, right? My wife was out, and it seemed like a really good chance to make something a little less healthy. And, you know, we only had grass-fed burgers, but that was okay. So pathetic though this is, and revealing though this is of my lack of real manness, I don't know how to make a decent burger. I mean, I've stood in front of a barbecue enough times, but, you know, other than burning it, I don't really have a plan. So do you know what I did? I lacked information, but it didn't stop me. I went online and I typed in how to make really good burger, and boy, we made some really good burgers. They were great. Okay. So it was true. I lacked information, but it didn't stop me. Why is it that sometimes not knowing what to do stops us, and other times it doesn't? Or let's take the second obstacle, you know, belief, right? I just don't believe in myself. You know, we do a program each year called Creating the Impossible. It's actually going to be not my next book, but the book after that we've already agreed with Hay House. It's going to come out in 2017. And it's this amazing program where over 3 months, people take on projects where the rule is you have to be pretty sure you're going to fail before you start, right? You have to take on a project. And the way I usually say it is a 50% or less chance of success. But I actually think I should up it. I actually think next year we might go 10% or less chance of success. So something that you really want and you really, really, really don't think you can pull off in the time allotted. And people go out. And sometimes they fail, but surprisingly often they either succeed or make huge progress on creating what it is that they want. Why isn't it being impossible an obstacle in the midst of the course? Or maybe it's, well, other people, you know, other people don't in my life aren't supportive of me. Well, I can guarantee you there's things in your life you've done in spite of other people not being supportive of you. So why is it that in one situation, the lack of support stops you, but in another situation, it doesn't? It might annoy you, but it doesn't stop you. Well, how many times have you done things when it didn't feel like there was enough time? How often have you pulled something off when you didn't have the money when you started, but somehow once you kind of got into it, the money showed up or the money stopped being relevant? How often have you felt the fear and done it anyways, as opposed to felt the fear and been stopped by it? Why is it that all of these obstacles don't always stop us? And it's not just the size of the obstacle, because sometimes we're really crunched for time and do it anyways. Sometimes we really don't believe it and do it anyways. Sometimes other people are really actively against it, but we do it anyways. And other times, you know, I remember when I first played American football and I was not a big kid. I wasn't tiny, but, you know, I loved playing touch football. It was really fun. And the first time I played tackle football in pads, I started getting hit. And turns out I don't really love it, you know? Didn't know that. Love watching other people do it. I didn't love it. I was like 12. And I remember I was playing on defense. No, I was playing on offense, and there was the pass got intercepted. So the guy on defense intercepted the pass, and I was chasing him, trying to tackle him. And somebody kind of lay down in front of me on the ground. So they didn't even really tackle me or block me. They just kind of tripped in front of me. And I took myself out of the play. I let that block knock me out of the play so that I couldn't catch the guy. Now, why is it that in that instance, that guy falling down in front of me was enough to take me out of the play? But there were other times, as I got more into the football, where I'd go through two guys and I'd get where I was trying to go. What's the difference that makes the difference between something being a genuine obstacle and it stopping you? That's what I want to explore today. So the numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the US, dial 001-760-918-4300. I'm going to get to as many of you as I can today. So let me take it a step further. And Mitchell and Robin, you guys are first in the queue, just so you know. Here's what I've seen is the difference between something being an obstacle and it stopping us. It's the state of mind we're in at the time that we look at it. It's that simple. When we're connected up, when we're in our better self, our best self, when we're living from mind, when we're hooked in flow, not really thinking about ourselves, but just present to the situation we're in. Obstacles just look like obstacles. They don't look like things that we have to trip ourselves over. They're puzzles to be solved. They're challenges. Not because we reframed them, but because that's really how we see them. It's a beautiful, I don't want to ruin it, and I might, so I'm going to do a little spoiler alert, and now would be a great time to make yourself a cup of tea, pour yourself a glass of whiskey, make a sandwich if you don't want me to ruin the movie The Martian for you. I'm going to try not to, but I might. I loved this movie. I can't recommend it enough. It's Matt Damon. It's based on an Andy Weir novel. I've not read the novel, so I can't speak to the novel, but and my favorite line in it is man, I'm going to have to science the shit out of this when he finds himself faced with a challenge. It's basically the story of a scientist, part of a Mars expedition, who gets left behind on Mars and basically has to try and find a way to survive. Well, what he does is he faces a series of kind of ridiculous challenges, of obstacles, like, what am I going to eat? Like, how am I going to stay breathing when there's no oxygen on the planet? Like, how am I going to get to a possible rescue spot when the Mars rover that I've got can only actually travel about 2 hours and this place is about 30 hours away? So he faces genuine obstacles, but none of them stop him. Well, that's because it doesn't look to him like it's about him. It doesn't look to him like he's got to prove something about himself. It doesn't look to him like it's about whether or not it's fair or he's being punished by some kind of a angry, vengeful God. It's just, hey, this is what's in front of me now. And it's quite fun, the creative ways he comes up with for solving most of the problems. And I won't completely ruin the movie as to whether or not he solves all the problems, but it's really enjoyable. I really do recommend it as an example of somebody living in the flow of creative wisdom. Well, when you're in that place in you, obstacles are just obstacles. When you get disconnected from it, when you get caught up in your ideas of how things should be, how long they should take, whether or not they should happen to people like you, well, now all your creativity is creating that reality. It's not helping you create the reality that you want. And so in a way, there's really only one problem in life, which is we get caught up in our thinking and lose sight of both the present moment and the amazing resource of mind we have inside us. And there's really only one solution. Go home. Make your way back to that space inside you where you're already connected up. Go back into the flow of life. Go back into the flow of your own creative wisdom. And then one of two things happens. Either obstacles stop looking like obstacles, or they keep looking like obstacles, but they no longer look like reasons to take yourself out of the game. So let's begin out in Scotland with, now I've got Mitchell on my screen. Is it Mitchell or Michelle?
It's Mitchell. That's correct. Everyone calls me Michelle for some reason because they always see the T in my name.
Well, you see, there we go. My first obstacle overcome. What do I call her? I'll call you Mitchell because it's your name. What are we going to talk about today, Mitchell?
Well, I feel that I sabotage my own progression, and it's taken me a long time to figure out where I wanted to be in my career, what's going to make me happy, and what, you know, it's going to be something that I enjoy in the long-term future, not just for now, not just for this second. And I did that through a little bit of meditation, a lot of talking to family and friends, and that was okay. But I doubt myself so much when I make a decision to either move from where I'm living, so it's going to be better for me and my son. I doubt into my decision to go back to school to finish my last year because I don't feel that I'm good enough. I doubt myself when an opportunity is given to me by somebody else, and I say to myself, what is it that you see in me that I don't see. You see something, and I don't get it. And it's quite weird for me to hear feedback from people that I'm doing a good job, because I never really get that, if that makes sense, because I've been on my own for so long with my son.
So I'm going to ask you a really weird question, Mitchell.
Okay.
Do you know where doubt comes from? Do you know what it's made of?
No.
It's made of candy floss. It's made of cotton candy, for those of us in America. It's like we take a piece of cotton candy and we make it into a doubt monster. And then we listen to it or wrestle with it or rail against it or try and do something about it.
Yeah.
When it there's nothing to be done about thought. Right? Thought comes and goes if we let it.
I think, oh gosh, don't want to start crying.
It's okay. It makes for great radio. Go for it.
Before, it was a couple of weeks ago, before Dr. Doreen Dyer died, I was listening to his talk show, and he was talking about, why do people take antidepressants? And I was on it for like 4 years because I was so down and sad because my mom lived so far away from me, my family, that I created more like my friends. And he had this beautiful guest on, and she was talking about her husband and what happened to him taking the medication. And for a long time, I say to myself, I need to get myself off this because it's not good. And when I found out he died, I cried for a couple of days because it was just like a shock. But I was so grateful that I Pompeii House when I did, and I found all these different amazing listeners, and it was so incredible just to get that okay from heaven, that it was okay for me to not take it. And I didn't believe in myself that I could cope without it. And it's been almost 2 months, and I was trying to do the self-reflection thing. Was I, you know, better being on it, or was I worse? And I realized that I was so in a different bubble, in a different world. And, you know, the things that were thrown at me when I was on medication, I could definitely deal with it. But now it's like I can deal with it, but I could see why. And it was like, I don't know, it felt like a father was taken away from me when he died. When he died, because I felt his message was for me to stop taking this, because I wasn't able to see properly. I wasn't able to hear properly because I was so scared of what other people think of me and what people think to me. And Mitchell, it really hurt me.
So Mitchell, let me ask you, if you're not used to it already, you'll know I ask a lot of stupid questions. Let me ask you a stupid question. Okay. Do you think that Dr. Dyer's passing in any way nullifies what you heard when you listened to him? Like, is it less true what he said because he died after he said it?
No.
Okay.
He was saying it for a long time. I just think it's the time when you, I think it's when everyone has that light bulb moment when it's switched on and you, and it actually sink in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, think of it this way. I mean, this is a guy so committed to getting his message out that he's willing to die to make the point. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, we're all going to miss him. I'm not in any way trying to belittle it. But the truth is, what's going on with you, which is what we're talking about, it's wonderful to allow ourselves to be touched by the wisdom of another. But what is touched in us is our own wisdom. And what we can stay with is that wisdom within that got touched when you listened, that gets touched when we listen to the wise people around us. It's our own wisdom that recognizes wisdom.
Yeah. It's just the doing part. Why can't we just do what we've been told to do? It's so beneficial for us because you hear it so many times. It's just like, why don't we just do it? You
know? So here's how I know. There's an answer to that question, Mitchell, right? Here's how I know whether or not I've really seen something, is I'm doing it. If I've sort of seen it, if I haven't seen it at all, it's not even on my radar. If I've sort of seen it, I usually kind of think, yeah, I ought to do that, or why aren't I doing that? If I really see it, I'm doing it. So it's not a doing problem. It's a seeing problem. It's not that I really get it, but I just can't do it. It's that I haven't really seen it. And the good news about that is the only thing I ever need to do to really see it is to keep looking. To really look for the truth within myself. To really look to that deeper wisdom, regardless of what shape the candy floss thoughts are taking on any particular moment.
Yeah, true.
And that you can stay with, and that you can rely on. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's your mission, should you choose to accept it.
Yeah. I think it's just the worst thing is believing in something that is not right, and you know your body is telling you it's not right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah.
I get it. That's wonderful. Thank you, Mitchell.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're very welcome. You know, it's too simple, I think. I think that's what we're up against. We think there's got to be more going on than just I'm caught up in my thinking. and cut off from my wisdom. I mean, there's got to be, no. It really is time, money, fear, other people. I'm missing something. There's a skill. It really isn't. Because when you're in touch with that deeper part of yourself, with your own wisdom, you find your way as best you can. And when you're not, you struggle, even if the obstacle is an inch high. Let's go out to Burbank, California, and speak with Robin. Robin, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi. We're going to talk about whatever comes to consciousness for you, because I got through. So I am an author. I've been writing for 50 years. I've raised 5 kids, and I'm just now beginning to look at coming out with my work.
Mm-hmm.
And I've survived many things, many abuses. I lost a parent at age 10. I lost a sibling to suicide. I lost another sibling to pancreatic cancer. Then I lost a mom to a broken heart. So they've all passed. And I've been very blessed with 5 wonderful children and a husband. And I'm out here supporting my youngest in his acting pursuit. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the family, we're all over the country. So I spent a lot of time focusing on my work this last 3 years in the, quote, spare time I have. So it just seems to me that there's always everything you named, all 9 things I could relate to, one piece of every category you talked about. At the same time, I'm working so hard. I've even, done meditations where I've released the vows of poverty. I listen to Hay House daily. I am working on my health. I eat healthily. I exercise. I feel like whatever's stopping is not conscious. Quite the contrary.
So let me rephrase that, Robin, and see if it still sounds accurate to you.
Okay.
So you've got a sense that you're not moving forward with the either speed and or freedom that you could be, and you're not conscious of what it is that stops you from moving forward with that degree of freedom and speed. Would
Correct.
That be okay?
Correct.
So where is it that you're trying to get? Like, what is the direction of travel that you're not moving forward on?
I'm 35,000 words into a novel. Mm-hmm. And I want to finish it and publish it. I want to turn it into a script. I want to pursue my children's stories that I've written. I want to take the poetry I've written, and I've recently, acted on this. I've got my work critiqued by a professional, and he encouraged me to go forward. I read at a bookstore in Pasadena, and I got very good feedback in live, from the people there. So I've made these baby steps, and I'm trying to write every day. At the same time, it just feels like there's so many pulls that I'm not going forward at, I want to go quicker, I guess.
Well, fair enough. I mean, most people do. but the question is, are you going forward at all? In other words, are you in the game, or are you thinking about the game? Are you actually, how many more words, let's do it this way. How many more words are on paper or computer paper this week than there were last week?
3 chapters.
Okay. So it's not true to say that you're really being stopped. What's true to say is you think you should be going faster than you are.
Yeah. Well, for example, I finished two chapters and I had to reinstall my Microsoft Word and I lost it. So I had to recreate it.
But you did.
But I did.
Right. So if you think that one of the perks of listening to Hay House Radio is that you will suddenly become immune to life being life, computers being computers, and shit happening, I got some bad news.
Right.
So what you're describing, unfortunately, Robin, and I'm not trying to be glib, but people die, even people that we love. Right? That is part of the reality of the world that we live in. And that takes, if we're caring, which I get, you are a caring person, that takes a certain amount of our time and attention to be with the people who are left behind.
Mm-hmm.
So that is simply time that we are going to be doing that instead of other things. There are things that go on with, if I had a dollar for every time I lost something on my computer, that's just like, that's what happens. So that's something that's just part of real life. You know, Sid Banks, one of my mentors, used to say, you know, life is a contact sport. Stuff's going to happen. And that's why things usually take longer than we think they should, because we make it up as if our only thing in job in the world, for example, in your case, well, yeah, if my only job in the world, my only responsibility in the world was to write, then I would be able to write this quick and I'd get this much done and I'd get all these projects and I'd have them all done by that. That's not anybody's life.
Right.
And actually, because I work with some of the top screenwriters in Hollywood, and even they whose entire lives are built around writing, they don't write as much as they think they should on the whole, because after a couple hours, you know, you're kind of done for the day.
Right. That is true. My own worst critic.
Well, I think what it is, Robin, from the sound of it, is that you think that it's meaningful how long it's taking you in comparison to whatever number you made up in your head.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm not convinced that it's ever meaningful what number we make up in our head for how long something's supposed to take. Let me give you an extreme. Okay. And this was one of my first coaching sessions that I ever watched somebody doing with this inside out understanding that I teach from in this show. So it was somebody who wanted to be a writer. Actually, wasn't, you know, in his mind, he wasn't a writer. And he wanted coaching on his writer's block. And so the coach said, well, okay, so, you know, what do you want? I want to get my first book done. And what stops you? Well, I've got writer's block. Well, what do you mean? Well, you know, I just start a chapter and then I start questioning it. And then I write something. But then by the time I get back to it, it doesn't look right anymore. So I rewrite it. And the coach kept going, well, I'm not sure I understand what the problem is. And I'm sitting there watching this coaching session going, my hands up in my head. Like, I can tell you what the problem is. The problem is he's not writing. And the guy finally comes out and says, no, you don't understand. I've been working on this for 7 years. And the coach, completely nonplussed, just looks at him and goes, well, what makes you think that your problem is anything other than you're really, really bad at guessing how long it's supposed to take?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, we have this unwarranted belief in our made-up time frames. And we have a real lack of faith in the rhythm of life.
Well, I'm trying to get to that faith. My healer said to me, and it was the best visual she could. It was wonderful. She said, "Just put your hands up on the roller coaster. Just put it up. Just put them up." And I use that imagery daily, like for someone when you lose a parent, when you're little, you become more controlling because of circumstances that you had no control of. So letting go of control was a challenge for me, and still is, but I've come a great distance with it. So I use that imagery every day to just let go and let God. And
so I'm going to, Robin, are you okay? And I ask this advisedly. Are you okay if I poke at that a little bit?
Sure.
Okay. See, here's what I think the problem that we human beings have with letting go of control is. It's that we think we have control.
Right.
So it really isn't a case of, oh, I need to let go, I need to let go, I need to let go. Because to be honest, whether you let go or hold on tight doesn't make a damn bit of difference.
Because you have no control.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's much more of kind of a seeing. If you can start to see that none of that's up to you.
Right.
Then it stops being an achievement or a failure to let go and let God. And it just starts being a noticing, life seems to be carrying me forward. My wisdom seems to be putting ideas in my head about what to do. It's occurring to me to sit down and write again, and I'm actually writing. Oh, now it's occurring to me to do other things, and I'm doing them. Oh, now it's occurring to me to do something else, but I'm trying to make myself do what I think I should do. And we just start to see how much busier we are in our heads than actually makes a damn bit of difference in the world.
I hear you.
And that's where freedom lies.
I like that.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
It's so funny because we see the obstacle, right? We see, this is clearly a problem, but we don't see that we're experiencing a projection of our own thoughts. We don't see that it's just how it works. We think and we feel our thinking. And it looks to us as we look out at the apparent world through our thinking that the world is thought shaped, right? We don't see that we're looking through our own thinking, and that's what we're seeing, as if it's outside us. So it looks like the world really is conspiring against us. It looks like there really is a battle for control. It looks like there really is something for us to do or not do on the inside that will make the difference on the outside. And then that thinking changes. It settles down. We drop back into that place of wisdom and peace inside us, that creative potential inside us. And suddenly all of that becomes null and void. And we're back in the flow of thought, back in the flow of creativity, and back in the game. Let's go out to Dayton, Ohio, and let's speak with Jeff. Jeff, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Yes, I was wanting to be able to get a little bit of advice in terms of my wife and I's communication with our son. We've had ongoing issues just in terms of defiance, getting homework turned in, and in a lot of our communications, it's gotten to the point where he's very shut down in the communication, and he doesn't really want to talk about it in terms of the, he says he's fine on the homework, yet he's behind. And if we end up pushing forward and say, hey, we really need to talk about this, we need to have a direction on this, what's going on with it. And so it seems that the communication is very difficult And I was looking at some outside sources to be able to hopefully help that communication along and find ways to be able to get past that and hopefully help him to, you know, find ways to be able to get things turned in without feeling he has to resist every step along the way. In some cases, it seems like just because we're asking him to follow through with it. Let me ask you a question,
Jeff, or a couple of questions that are going to call on you to make some educated guesses.
Sure.
Would that be okay? All right.
Sure.
So I want you to take an educated guess based on, you know him up to a point. And what if I had your son on the show? Okay, and I asked him, "Hey, Jeff, what's your son's name?"
Brandon.
Okay, so I said, "Hey, Brandon, what would be great? Like, what do you really want? What do you think how do you think he would answer me?"
Well, I think that he would end up saying that it would be along the lines of he'd want to have his independence.
Mm-hmm.
He would want to have us not bugging him. He'd want to be able to get his own car when he turns 16, takes his driver's test in a couple of months.
Mm-hmm. And if I said to him, so let's stay with this game, okay? So Brandon, if you had that, so. We'll hold off on the car for a minute, but let's say, you know, your parents stop bugging you. You've got more independence. What would you do with that extra independence? Like, what do you want for the rest of your time at school?
It makes sense.
What makes sense?
Well, in terms of what would he do with that independence? What would he do with the rest of his time at school?
See, here's my experience of I get the chance to talk to a fair number of teens and sort of young adults, and what I find, and it's quite remarkable in some ways and quite obvious in others, is they want to do well. They want to, unless they really have a kind of a life path that has nothing to do with school, which occasionally is the case. But on the whole, nobody really wants to, sit there and not learn anything. Nobody really wants to, struggle and half-ass their way around. Though all of those things are just kind of what we come to as a strategy for getting by or getting through. If you really kind of find out what they want is rarely out of alignment with what you want, unless what you want is awfully specific, right? You want him to be a, rocket science, medical doctor, lawyer. Maybe you're going to have problems, but you want him to be happy, fulfilled, and do well in life. You're really not going to get a lot of pushback once you get outside of the communication bounds, right?
Right.
So it opens up an interesting possibility, which is what if you become, and I'm so wary, Jeff, but you asked for advice, so I'm going to give stuff that might sound like advice, and it's not my style, but I'm going to play with it anyways, is what if you took on the role of being a support system for your son creating what he wants instead of a buggy driver trying to whip the horse to take the cart where you think it should go. Like, do you think that where he would want to go if he had the space to explore and make mistakes would be radically different to what you'd like for him?
I think that actually ties in with the direction I'd like to see.
Yeah.
So where where that gap is that I need to be able to bridge is, all right, how do I do that without, you know, at times sounding preachy? And the, and of course, we've got to get past the idea that often, even when I'm trying to find out, you know, when I try to take the approach of, what's working well, what isn't working well, how would you change it, it still comes across to him that I'm bugging him. So
well, and I'll tell you why, Jeff. I'll tell you what I hear in that. Right? What I hear is, hey, I know what you need, so you tell me what's stopping you from getting what I think you need, and I'll help you with it. That's a little different.
That's the way it would be coming across to
you. No, I understand. I understand what you mean.
Is that what? I mean, was that what you meant? That he?
It's you got to kind of get back to basics, and the basics is with most kids that I talk to of that age. I mean, there's a, you know, when they're younger, it's a whole different thing, but they don't really, they haven't taken the time to really consider what they want because everybody is so busy telling them what they should want. And I don't just mean you guys as parents. I mean every TV show, everything that they read, all of their friends, right? There's so much of a bombardment of this is what you should want, right? The entire advertising industry and all of its permutations, its job is to tell you what you should want. And when you've got a young mind that's just beginning to kind of find its way, you have to almost be four times as diligent in helping it to look within itself, in helping a young person to look within themselves to see what their wisdom is telling them, to see what they actually want, as opposed to the noise of all the things they're being told they should want or fighting against being told they should want. If you can connect with your son at that level, don't rush to the how to get there, because the first 10 things that come out of his mouth that he wants probably aren't what he really wants. They're what he thinks he ought to want or might get him what he wants.
Or it might be what he's seen other people in his
right.
school have, and so he wants that too.
Exactly. If you can stay in that conversation with him, you will, and you'll know because the feeling will change between you. You'll start to see, oh, he's got wisdom in him. He actually has an inner guidance system that he's just not used to engaging with right now. And it may mean, by the way, that for a couple of months, it doesn't all go brilliantly the direction you think that it should while he hooks into his GPS. But if you can stay with him while he finds his GPS, he learns what it sounds like inside himself, you've set him up for life. You've given him the one of the two greatest gifts I think a parent can give a child. One is to know that they're loved. That I think is perhaps the greatest gift that a parent can give a child, to know that they're loved no matter what, even when we disagree with them, even when we argue with them, even when we kind of want to throttle them, to know that they're loved. But the other is to help them find their inner wisdom, to help them find that GPS inside them that will guide them and serve them for the rest of their lives.
In terms of being able to stay on track with that, where I see the biggest initial obstacle is me knowing what to do. Is there anything that you might recommend? And I've actually been starting to look at local, you know, coaches, life coaches or motivators that might be able to help guide us along on this.
Yeah.
But along those lines, is there anything you might recommend for that support system to keep my wife and I on the right track with thinking outside the normal box that we're probably sitting in?
Yeah, let me give you two things. First thing, shoot an email to sarah@supercoach.com, S-A-R-A @supercoach.com. She works with me. She's sort of our director of community engagement, we call her, but she is plugged into a network of people. And I seem to remember we've got some people who are pretty near you that you could talk to, at some level, to support you. So that would be the sort of first thing is she'll be a great conversation for you around that. The more general thing, that I'll just throw in kind of as a parting gift, don't go home yet, is that you actually are seeing something really big there. And I don't know that you're seeing something big there, which is you do have to kind of see it in you before you can help him see it in him. That when you start to see, oh, hang on, I've got a sort of an inner guidance system too, that kind of lets me know which way to go and when I don't know and when to go full speed and when to hold back. And the more you see it in you, the easier it will be for you to point to it in him.
That actually does resonate real well. There's been a lot of things that have, I guess, been beyond conventional wisdom that I've been really aware of and try to stay in touch with for quite some time. But there's aspects of my life that hasn't really touched on enough. And just events over the last year have just kind of pushed in a certain direction that says, you know, I haven't integrated all these ideas well enough, and there's too much stuff that's kind of gotten in the way. And these have really been glaring opportunities that there needs to be something a little bit different, a little bit different direction to tie it together. So you're along the right. You're definitely pointing out something that has been that I've definitely been searching with much more recently than in past years.
Yeah, and I think that's gonna take you where you want to go.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. A real pleasure.
Thanks for taking my call.
You know, it's I don't know anyone who doesn't want. I'm not saying there's nobody in the world, right? But I don't know anyone who doesn't want the best for their kids. And we want it so much that we start to think that we've got it. Right. Well, what's best for my kid is for them to do what I think. Right. And we none of us really think that. I mean, we do, but we don't. Right. When we stop and think about it, we know what we want for our kids is self-reliance. We want them to find their compass. You can call it their conscience. You can call it their guidance. You can call it their wisdom. But we want them to find that place inside themselves from which whatever life throws at them, they'll do the absolute best that can be done. And that is actually within the realms of possibility because everybody has that inside them. And the more we see it inside ourselves, the easier it is to see it in others. And then the easier it is to see, the easier it is to point to. And that's, you know, I'll go back to what I said. I genuinely believe the two greatest gifts we can give our children, we can give the people we care about in our lives, is to let them know that we love them unconditionally, even when we hate them. And to point them towards the ultimate resource inside, their connection with the divine, their spiritual nature, their true self, their inner wisdom, their innate well-being, their innate mental health, their fundamental okayness. And when somebody sees that for themselves, their life changes for the better from that moment forward. hope you've enjoyed the show today. Check us out online. Supercoach.com is where you can find out about the trainings that we've got coming up, including Supercoach Academy, supercoachacademy.com. You can follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/mneil. Until next week, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.